There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone, and I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. I just wonder how this works out. If you have a situation where... we have a couple virus stories if we start off Midday Mobile today on a Monday. One dealing with the first vaccine here stateside on for COVID-19. We'll get to that in a second. The other one about the Russian hack into U.S. agencies, including the Treasury and Commerce Agency. So, I am not under any assumption that we're not doing this ourselves as a nation to other countries, but even that makes this even better. So say we, like in this case, we know that Russian government hackers. So this isn't even like Boris and Natasha just doing it for funsies. This is like, the Russian government has their people. Okay. And when we meet up with countries that hack us, and now even our allies hack us, and we even hack our allies. I mean, Israel and the United States, there were stories back in the past about the amount of espionage done, even though that's a big ally, the espionage going back and forth. How do you, when there's been a hack like this that cost tons of dollars and issues and embarrassment or whatever it is for a nation, and you go to the G8 or you're at the UN, you're there at the... you're there at the espresso counter at the UN, hanging out with people. How do you not go street with it? How do you not go, hey, you, like a Russian guy. Hey, you, Israeli guy. You know, when you hacked us the other, and get into it, how does it not just turn to, when you know good and well, like the story out many places today, U.S. government hackers breached Treasury and Commerce Departments along with other U.S. government agencies as part of a global espionage campaign that stretches back months, according to the people familiar with the matter. This is nothing new. This story is not new. This is the latest part of it. And we'll talk about some of the details. You know that the nickname for this, Dalton, which I, Dalton, if you've seen the nickname here, Cozy Bear. The Russian hackers are known as Cozy Bear. Okay. How, when you go to some deal and you're standing there next to the country you know that's hacking, you don't just like push them up against the wall. How do you, I mean, and how they not do it to us? I don't know. I mean, it's just funny to have, you know, all the smiles and the handshakes, and there'll be an event, and here the world leaders have assembled, And they're all looking at each other, knowing that the other country is just hacking the snot out of them. Officials were scrambling over the weekend, according to MSN News. Officials were scrambling over the weekend to assess the nature and extent of the intrusions and implement effective countermeasures, but initial signs suggested the breach was long-running and significant. People familiar with the matter said. Here we go. The Russian hackers, known by the nickname of APT-29, which I thought was Alabama Public Television in the Shoals, APT-29, or Cozy Bear, as part of their nation's Foreign Intelligence Service, the SVR, and they breached email systems in some cases, said people familiar with the intrusions, who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Okay, we know this stuff. Said it's the same Russian group that hacked the State Department and White House email servers during the Obama administration, which, unless I see something new, am I to assume that they got in the same way? Wasn't it Podesta that clicked on some phishing email? I mean, what kind of chance do I have for my older family members to open their email and not get hacked when somebody's clicking on a phishing email at the Department of Treasury or Commerce? Of course, in a response here, the Russian embassy in Washington on Sunday called the reports of Russian hacking baseless. In a statement on Facebook, it said, attacks in the information space contradict Russian foreign policy and national interest. Russia does not conduct offensive operations in cyber domain. Okay. So there you go. The Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency issued an alert yesterday warning about the active exploitation of SolarWinds Orion platform from versions of the software released back in March and June. They encourage affected organizations to read the SolarWinds and FireEye advisories for more information. So they got this SolarWinds, which I don't know what SolarWinds software does, but they got SolarWinds, and I guess inside the software was the hack. So there you go. There's one virus, and just I like the fact that the Russian SVR has a place on Facebook for it to answer and say, attacks in the information space contradict Russian foreign policy of national interest. Russia does not conduct offensive operations in cyber domain. I like the fact that there is a place on Facebook. I don't know. I haven't friended them. They haven't sent me a friend request. I don't know where they are on Facebook, but they answered to that. All right. So there's one of the virus stories. The other, of course, is the story you heard about it this morning, as we have they did the big countdown here, and the COVID vaccine was starting to flow here. According to the Associated Press, the biggest vaccination campaign in U.S. history kicked off today as health workers rolled up their sleeves for shots to protect them from COVID-19 and start beating back the pandemic. A day of optimism, even as the nation's death toll closed in on 300,000. Okay. And they said, with a countdown of 3-2-1, workers at Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center gave the first injections to the applause. And in New Orleans, Stephen Lee, intensive care unit pharmacist at Ochsner Medical Center, summed it up as he got his own vaccination. He said, we can finally prevent the disease as opposed to treating it. Okay, so it's going out to healthcare workers around the country. I don't want this to happen, but I've seen this coming, and I'm starting to see the hubbub on social media. It's the hey, my healthcare worker got a vaccination and all I got is a stinking t-shirt kind of reaction here. As people are saying, okay, why am I not here in line? We look at Alabama. Okay, frontline healthcare workers. I think you can get some agreement there, but then I can make an argument that does a young healthcare worker need the vaccine more than an older person in an assisted living facility? I think you make a logical argument and say, yes, that young healthcare worker not getting sick does more for saving more people, but you can make get ready for this is going to be the next thing we deal with will be this have and have nots on the vaccine side. There are plenty of people, and we're going to talk about this too on the show, that don't want it, you know, or either they're hesitant, they're shy vaccinators, or they're never vaccinators. Vaccination resistance people out there that send me emails all weekend long. For some reason, to tell me about that. But there are the people that want the vaccine, and when there's not going to be enough to go around, then you're going to get more of this, you know, why does somebody get it and I don't get it? And when it starts getting just outside those people on the front lines of healthcare and getting a little further in and there are more doses available, well, just wait. Just wait to hear the hue and cry for the people who don't get the vaccination. All right. So that's it. Well, by the way, we will visit this on tomorrow's show. We're going to talk about the vaccine, why the mistrust of vaccines out there. It's going to be part of the show. So we'll get into that coming up tomorrow on Midday Mobile. In addition, later on this hour, John Sharp's going to join me. We'll talk with him. Got a lot to talk with him about. And in coming up at hour number two, Andy Ryan, executive director, and he is with the Alabama Opportunity Scholarship Fund. We'll get into what that is if you've never heard of it and why it is a question now, how it will be treated going forward. So we'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. All right, do that and take your calls and text. Calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Fred, thank you for the CDB reference. He heard the Russian operative was named Old Green Tea, a mastermind in the ways of espionage. I'm picking up what you're putting down, Fred. Russians answered on Facebook that they didn't hack us. Okay. News next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Let me refresh this here. No, still no friend request from Russian hacking agency Cozy Bear. I just don't know where they go on Facebook. You know, to says AP story said they went to Facebook to deny the hacking of the Department of Treasury and Commerce. I'm just trying to get my mind around that. All right, I want you all to say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. And Larry already gave me a sneak peek that we get to talk about trucks. Hey, Larry.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, especially when you and I talk trucks. Lay it on me.
We just traded in a 2007 Lincoln Mark LT, which is the pickup version. It's a crew cab, four-wheel drive, leather, navigation, sunroof. I mean, it is super, super nice, and it's made in America, not Russia, by the way.
And I bet you can find some financing on that vehicle.
Absolutely. I mean, the mileage is way below average miles, so we can get long-term financing and great rates, even though it's a used vehicle. With approved credit, we can get, rates in single digits.
And if somebody's looking at getting that vehicle, or Santa's looking at picking up a vehicle, this is probably the time to get with y'all right now.
Absolutely. Like I said, business is really good. We got great inventory. We got cars and trucks coming daily. You know, we got the financing. And like I said, the credit unions are really aggressive with rates. We got some folks done at 4% on first-time buyer Saturday.
You got my attention with that. Tell folks how to come check out the inventory and talk financing.
Come see us at Highway 90 at Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks. All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. Yeah, I was in one of those Lincolns at one time, too. It's like luxury inside. It was like, I was like, dang, this is a nice pickup. All right, text here. Yeah, okay. So people asking about, yeah, so go back for a second here. AP said, I didn't say, AP said in their story, or no, I'm sorry, it's MSN said in their story that the Russian on Facebook. I'm sorry. Is that strange to me that the fact that Russia responded to the hacking on Facebook, denying that they did it? Am I the only one? I guess I'm the only one. Somebody said, "Well, that's where else would they do it? They wouldn't on Facebook, really? You would have something like that, Cozy Bear Hacking Network on Facebook. I don't know. I haven't gotten a friend request from them." That they would just chime on Facebook and say, "We did not do it." Okay. You just take their word for it. Oh, my gosh. All right. Electoral College here. I want to run through a couple things here that just went down. And Electoral College met. By the way, I didn't see. I want to look if we got video here in Alabama, because they were coming together at noon today here in Alabama for the votes here. And I got a note here from Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, said this was hosted by Secretary of State John Merrill, and I'm told J. Danny Cooper will be in character as Uncle Sam. So if there's video of somebody dressed as Uncle Sam voting here, let us know. But you had, the different states going through doing the votes. You heard confirmation of it on the news. I mean, it's a thing, y'all. As the Supreme Court did not move forward with hearing Texas's case, you've got... Now, I mean, people who've been saying, don't say President-elect Biden because the Electoral College hadn't met. Okay, well, now it's President-elect Biden. And how this works, I mean, somebody was asking kind of the history of this, how long we've been doing it. We've been doing it the whole time. It was this kind of idea here so you had the push and pull, right, in our republic. And you had people that, I'm going to put this in, probably not the fancy vaulted language it needs to be in, but some of our founders trusted the people, some did not. And it's some of the checks and balances that are in our system here that instead of having, now you can have it really to some degree go through the motion, right? The electors are going to vote the way the state did, unless they're a faithless elector. I don't know if we've had a recent, I know back in 2016, we had a big discussion of faithless electors. I don't know if we have it now. But it's going through the motions, but it's there as a check. It was something that was debated, put into our system, and so we had the Electoral College. And that's why, and they, you know, they, you vote on November 3rd, and it's December 14th this year. And there's some formula. It's like something after the, it's like the first Monday after the second Wednesday, or I don't know. It's something like that. When they decide the Electoral College meets, it's usually, I mean, it's in the first half of December. But what went down is, you know, what we heard on November probably 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere in there, that Joe Biden had the Electoral College votes. Now the question is, as President Trump, and I heard Stephen Miller today speaking for the president, saying they're still going to fight it and it's not done till Inauguration Day. Maybe I'm missing something, but if the Supreme Court doesn't hear Texas's case, and I think conservatives out there agree that was probably the best bite at the apple, what Texas was coming with and attorneys general in other states supported. If Supreme didn't take that, like Electoral College met, what can be done? And maybe there is. Maybe it's just standing in front of me. I've missed it. But what can be done between now and Inauguration Day that's going to change that? Have you acquiesced to the idea that that's the way it's going to go down? Or are you still thinking, there's something else going to change? As unnamed texter said, I was watching WKRG's live stream of Stop the Steal rally in Spanish Fort, and WKRG suddenly interrupted it while John Barrow was speaking on voting irregularities. I have to check. I mean, I know folks over there. I don't know that. I don't think they've got a big conspiracy. Because first of all, that's Saturday, right? Saturday, you got the people at Master Control. You probably don't have the news director hanging over their shoulder. I would chalk it up to. Well, tell me, what did they interrupt it with? Did they, like, interrupt it with some kind of commercial set or programmer to go to the old black screen? What happened? Tell me, unnamed texter, so I can... And by the way, we're going to talk to Dr. Lou Campomenosi more about that in a little bit. So Anderson says they're not waiting for them to pull a rabbit out of their hat. However, they all have to do is prosecute and find guilty one person. Then the dominoes will fall. Yeah, And that's something I asked weeks ago, right? That back then, because we had talked to Dr. Alec Asensack, that if you let this go and something does come up, let's say it's March or April or whatever, what are you going to do? What if the Supreme Court sees it at that point? You're going to go in there and unseat the sitting president and reinstall Donald Trump? I don't know. And I wonder what there's the problem. And what Anderson's saying on here, and I'm following you, Anderson, there's so many, the allegations that have been made, and by, if you, the regular folks that said, hey, I saw this, I saw that, which were not where Texas went. Texas went another way because they thought, and most scholars thought it was more compelling to go the other way and go with the Texas suit and talk about constitutionality and equal protection. But those individual allegations, you saw the people on the TV talk shows, right? They got them on there and said, hey, I took ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. Well, then give us an answer. Why'd they do that? If that wouldn't, or, and even if it's not enough to overturn the election, which is fine. If it's not, I still want it investigated. See, there's, I guess, where I depart from the main path is there's a lot of people pushing for this specifically on partisan grounds, right? I push for it because if this kind of stuff is left unchecked and it's not prosecuted, even if it doesn't change, like I would still be for pursuing every one of these stories and that where people are making a claim that this or that happened or they moved these ballots or they were told this or here comes the, somebody and told them to leave and then they're counting ballots. Even if it doesn't change the outcome, I believe you need to go through and prosecute. Or not prosecute, you need to investigate these cases, and if wrong is found, you need to prosecute it. Because I'm worried about how this grows going forward. Now, the people with that, people with the secession talk. I got nothing for you on that. I don't know. If somebody, like, because somebody brought something up in Texas last week, that Texit thing, then people can file stuff. People can, in state legislatures, bring up all kind of stuff. That doesn't mean, like, there's, you know, all these people behind them. All right. So we'll do this. We're going to come back and we'll talk more about this with John Sharp from AL.com. He was at the Stop the Steal event in Spanish Fort on Saturday. It has a story on that, but also has a like a related story here about when it was Riley and Siegelman in a gubernatorial race, and it came down to small number of votes and questions about those votes. We'll dig into that with John a lot more when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. The segment of the show brought to you by my man Trey and 1-800-GOD-JUNK. If you're fixing to get new stuff, right, for Christmas, if you've been a good boy or girl, well, be a good boy or girl right now and get rid of the junk out of your house, out of your office, out of your garage, out of the storage unit. It could be stuff inside the house, outside the house. When I talked to my buddy Trey, who runs 1-800-GOD-JUNK here in Mobile and Baldwin County, he said, because I think it was, I think we had a discussion after one of those tornadoes that had come through earlier in the year. Remember, there were like two different tornadoes that had video of a trampoline flying through the air. And I said, hey, get those trampolines? He said, all the time. So if something big like one of the giant backyard trampolines or boxes inside the house or a storage unit you need cleaned out, get it done before Christmas and have more room for the things you're going to get and a little more peace of mind when you do it. You can set an appointment with 1-800-GOD-JUNK. It's very easy. Online at 1-800-GOD-JUNK.com. Pick up the phone, 1-800-GOD-JUNK. All right? They set appointments based on your life. It's a nice thing. They'll find a day that works for you and a time frame that works for you. They'll set that appointment, and then they show up at your place, and they say, hey, what's the job? You show them the job. They quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's a guy I've known for a long time, a local running 1-800-GOD-JUNK. So check out with Trey. Big national company, but Trey's been doing this 13 years in Mobile and Baldwin County. Check him out today. Get rid of that junk, 1-800-GOD-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOD-JUNK.com. All right. Y'all say hello to my buddy John Sharp from AL.com, who is, John, you said tied with my buddy Dalton in the College Pick'em series?
Yeah, we're tied for 19th.
All right, 19th. Well, don't, look, I'm not going to get into it because I'm in some other, you know, some other time frame away from you at 19th. So
I don't see anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not even, they actually dropped me from the list. I was disenrolled from the College Pick'em Challenge. So y'all are tied and we're trying to figure out a way to do a tiebreaker. Have you thought about we could set up some kind of arm wrestling or thumb wrestling match between you and Dalton?
Yeah, December 23rd, Pizza Strength Day. So we'll
all right,
on air. We'll take listener suggestions, and we got to break this tie. It don't be once the end of your tie. I don't know.
All right, listen. Why don't we open it up? Why don't we open up to the internet? What could go wrong? Or the listeners say, what would y'all decide if on Christmas Eve here on Midday Mobile? That in our College Pick'em series, which if y'all didn't do it this year, we'll tell you about it next year. You can get in it. If for college football picks, we've got a tie between John Sharp and Dalton Orwig, and we come up with some feat of strength or something that can be done right here at the FM Talk 106.5 studios to decide who will be the winner between the two and the tiebreaker. So I'm going to open it up to the internet, John, and the listeners, and we'll let you know what the plan is on Christmas Eve.
Sounds wonderful. But that said, we do have one more week of college football. So, you know, we can use our Dalton and I can use our brains on this one and go mano a mano on a pick. That's my challenge.
No, I want it to be. Okay. We'll work on that. But it's not nearly as fun as having y'all like have to do some kind of wrestling match or something like that. All right. I want a lot to get into, and people, of course, can check out your work over at AL.com. And reporting from over the weekend on Saturday's Stop the Steal event in Spanish Fort, you went there. You're at the event. What's your reaction? There's a discussion at crowd size. The pictures I saw and all that look pretty good.
Well, yeah, there we go with the crowd size again. The first thing I posted, you know, it looked like a good-sized crowd, and the first comment I get out is, well, why do you tell, you know, it's not, don't tell me about the crowd size. It doesn't look that big to me, and, well, and people that, let me have it. You know, it's just like, you know, you're darned if you do, darned if you don't. But I thought it was a good-sized crowd, especially for a Saturday. Election's over with.
Yeah.
You know, here we are, you know, the Supreme Court made its ruling, and we still had a fairly good-sized crowd. I think people just wanted to get together, especially Trump supporters, and perhaps it's that camaraderie, it's that there's still, you know, that feeling that you have after, you know, during the last couple of years. I mean, the Trump campaign through Mobile and through Pensacola drew big crowds, and they had that very, it was a very small size, you know, versus an, you know, actually president coming to town is going to draw a much larger crowd, obviously. But, you know, it's still that same vibe where you had, you know, the T-shirt vendors, the signs, the folks, you know, just kind of sharing, an experience together.
Yeah, it was interesting. Just to comment for a second there, and I watched it, and I believe me, I had put together my tweet and then backed it off. I said, I'm going to stay out of John's business, but I may still get back into it. You're a journalist, and you're reporting, you know, on the event happening and, you know, showing here's what happened. Here's the crowd. And the attacks weren't, you weren't offering any opinion other than here. I mean, you're doing your job reporting and you get attacked. And this is, I think, what happened on that story. And people can check you out on Twitter. We'll talk about that a little bit. Is emblematic of where we are on both sides, that there's no, like, you can't even mention something like, you know, you mentioned here's this event going on. And then all of a sudden, you're impugned for reporting on it.
Well, if you and I can recall back in 2015, back during the first rally that the president had in Mobile, we were trying to get the exact the crowd count,
mm-hmm.
and we never did. There never was an exact count, whether that was by design or for political purposes. You know, that's debatable. But you know, we tried to estimate the crowd count, and that followed up with some stories. And it wound up turning into a life of, you know, kind of a life of its own, because that became part of the Trump campaign experience. You know, there was never really a crowd count ever published at a lot of his rallies. And that became, remember the inauguration day. All remember that. And that, you know, as far as the debates on crowd counts and the way the president perceived that whole, you know, the criticism towards him, with regards to, some of the media coverage back then. So, yeah, I mean, the crowd counts ultimately become part of the, I guess, the Trump campaign experience. So I think people kind of are sensitive to that issue. And I understand that. And criticism is nothing new for me as a member of the media, nor is it for you. People are more welcome to go ahead.
No, but it's funny that that's where it goes before anything. And it's, you talk about the count. So if somebody's new to this show, that they'll say, that's Sean. He's, you know, he apologizes for Trump, or he's doing this or that. Y'all, at the same time, I was asked, you know, like John, what I thought the crowd count was at the rally. And I looked at the stadium and I kind of broke it down and gave what I thought. It had nothing political to it. Somebody just asked me what I thought the crowd was. And I said, hey, I don't do this for a living. I'm a talk show host, but okay, here's what I think it is. And then people immediately jumped to thinking that meant I didn't support the policies of Trump. I said, no, I was just answering a question. You asked me, you know, how many people do you think are in those seats? And I said, it doesn't even deal with the meat of policy. It's about numbers.
That's correct. And it did draw some stories. I did write some stories back then about, I talked to some crowd count experts. I remember talking to a professor out at Arizona State University about this issue. So it had a little bit of a life of its own back then. But, people are still sensitive to that issue, largely because of the initial run of the president back in 2015 and 2016. And then, of course, the inauguration day crowd size issue. I think we learned our lesson, maybe not put out exact numbers after the first rally, and in fairness, I think that's probably for the best. We don't know. You know, I'm not a crowd count expert, and I'm not about to enter in that line of profession anytime soon.
Good. Well, you reported on the event, and then a story I thought was a nice addendum to this over at AL.com. You said, Stop the Steal, Election Fraud Claims Revive Memories of Alabama's 2002 governor's race. And when I opened this up and started reading, I said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you reminded me of a bunch of stuff. Run through this. What is like 2002? What happened back then?
Yeah, 18 years ago, in a nutshell, the night of the election, incumbent Democratic Governor Don Siegelman goes to bed thinking he's won the election. Wakes up the next morning and finds out he didn't win the election. He did not win the election that Bob Riley did. And then we have 13 days of trying to figure out who won this election. And, you know, this story's taken a life of its own over the years. I've seen various different accounts, conspiracy theories, different versions from different sides. What happened is there was a voting machine in Baldwin County. And over the years, it's been, you know, Magnolia Springs is where it was that occurred at. That some sort of faulty number came out on election night that essentially gave Governor Siegelman at the time 7,000 extra votes than, in fact, he actually received from this voting machine, which, when it was retabulated and recounted, turned out that he didn't receive that many votes, and so his number dropped down considerably, and Bob Riley's number stayed the same, and Bob Riley wound up winning the governor's race. It was a razor-thin race that year. I mean, the margin was very tight, and Riley wound up winning something like around 3,100 votes. I mean, I think that was a difference statewide, mm-hmm. 1.3 million votes cast that year, so there was a lot of... There was a lot of attention on Baldwin County for several days. And, of course, this happens 2 years after the 2000 election, which, you know, the hanging chads next door in Florida, so on and so forth. This was kind of billed as Alabama's version of the Florida recount debacle, although there was never a recount. There was never a recount in this Alabama race. And I think that fueled some of the conspiracies over the years or some of the concerns, especially from the Siegelman camp, about, you know, what actually happened in Baldwin County. How come we couldn't get a recount? Why were the votes certified before we were able to talk to Governor Siegelman? He says he was kind of stuck in a catch-22 position. He thought about challenging the results, but at the time, the state attorney general, Bill Pryor, certified the results. So you can't go back and recount when they're already certified. And so there we have into the history books a political intrigue that'll last probably our lifetimes. I mean, we, you know, folks are wondering, you know, was there, what actually happened in Baldwin County that day? And, you know, of course, the story is the machine was faulty. There was nothing nefarious going on. That's the story you hear, especially from Republicans here in Baldwin County. But if you hear from the Siegelman camp, it's kind of a different version where they're wondering why certain Democratic operatives were not allowed to watch what actually happened with this particular voting machine inside the courthouse and Bay Minette, and why were these numbers certified before we could do a recount? So, no, it's interesting. It's interesting history. It's not all that long ago. It was only 18 years ago, but it's, you know, I thought it was kind of a timely story considering where we're at right now with a lot of accusations about voting machines going faulty in the presidential election. But we actually had that here in our own backyard. And, you know, historical significance. We haven't, that was the last time a Democrat was in the governor's seat, or actually even came close to winning the governor's seat, was in 2002.
You know, John, the questions about the vote back then, 3,100 votes, the disappearing thing and all that. Did we learn from that? Because you had John Merrill speaking at that event, right? The Stop the Steal event. John Merrill spoke at that, talking about the election integrity in Alabama. I haven't heard, and don't you know that be a lot of other states would like to point a finger at Alabama, but I hadn't heard anything, any claim of, election interference here.
That's correct. There's been no claims of that. And of course, John Merrill's been, he has talked about that since the election. You keep in mind, though, that Alabama's races were nowhere near as close as what we saw in some of these battleground states. The presidential contest was maybe the widest margin in a presidential race in at least since the 70s, since 72. And so it wasn't even a consideration. And then we also had the same case in the Senate race. So, you know, the statewide races, we're not seeing the close contest that you're seeing in these other states. That's why we have all this attention going on right now in Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and then to a certain degree Nevada and Arizona. But the, So, yeah, that's, you know, there hasn't been any problems, but then again, you know, it's, you know, we could recount to the cows come home, and you're not going to get any closer in the ultimate contest here, because it's a wide margin anymore. The Republicans are very dominant in the statewide race.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if, you know, history one day will turn it back the other way. I don't know. You know, people, if you told people 1970-something, right, 1980, that your Republicans would be in control of all state legislature, they probably would have said, no way, man. That seems pretty far-fetched.
Yeah, yeah. You know, politics change and it shifts and various, you know, the times change and you know, we're no longer anywhere close to where we were at in 2002. Now, it's interesting that Governor Siegelman did not want to pursue court cases and challenges to that outcome. You sometimes wonder if that had happened in today's political environment. You know, kind of what would have been, you know, the positioning of Governor Siegelman in a 2020 situation versus a 2002 situation. It's a different political environment completely than it was 18 years ago. And it's kind of interesting. Interesting history. Of course, it played out here in our backyard. Some of the players are still around, and well, they talked a little bit about it to me, and they all have their stories, and they're sticking with it. But
So everybody's holding to their. I mean, everybody's sticking to the same story. There's been no maybe.
Yeah, that's true. There's been no. Well, you know, maybe we ought to recount those ballots. And of course, I'd be interested. You know, for the historical sake, that hey, let's pull off the Baldwin County ballots. Let's take a look at them from 18 years ago. You can't change anything, right?
Are they archived somewhere? I mean, are they in one of those bankers' boxes somewhere where they could be recounted?
Certainly, I guess I could pursue that. But, you know, like I asked John Merrill that question, he said, no, they're certified, end of story. So that's kind of where we're at with it. But, yeah, it is interesting. Can we look back at some historical results, even though they've been certified, and just take a look at them for historical preservation purposes? I haven't really pursued that before, but that's interesting. Interesting question.
After you finish your tiebreaker with Dalton, then we're going to have John Sharp launching the Recount Project, where we'll recount votes from. We'll go back to the founding of a republic and recount those votes.
Yeah, it's like a time machine going back and see if we can alter the space-time continuum.
tell folks how to, of course, they can find your stories over at AL.com, but if they want to reach out to you on social media, how do they do that?
Yeah, at JohnSharp99.
Right. By the way, too, got a lot of suggestions coming in on how you and Dalton are going to do this tiebreaker. So if y'all don't get it figured out with this weekend's games, get ready. Games of chance and strength coming your way.
He's much younger than I am, so I got to be careful here.
Yeah, we'll keep it to games of chance then. There he is, John Sharp, as always. Thank you. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Phone number 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 12:55, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And so John Sharp brought it up that Dalton, I'm so glad to see back here in the studio, is tied up at 19th in the college pick'em. And I saw, like Fred had said, just tune back in. You're talking about pick'em results. I know someone who's interested in the final standings. And then if you run through that, who won here, then I'd like to talk about some of these ideas for the tiebreaker between you and John that had been suggested on the text line.
Man, I thought this would be open and shut this year after about halfway through. Mm-hmm. I thought that I was going to actually win.
You were like 32nd in the nation or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I got really high up in the nation.
Like even outside of our thing, you were in the bigger.
Yeah, I was on the top leaderboard on the front page of ESPN.
So what happened, man?
You know, things happen. I stopped picking the games correctly.
There's that.
Which was the major problem. And then I fell not only down the national leaderboard, but down the FM Talk 106.5 leaderboard. And yeah, so it looks like for me, I finished tied for 19th with John and Mr. Blow's picks here and the beer we got. So, you know, if they had a naming, if they gave a prize to the best names,
what's wrong with
the FM Talk crew would probably have the top usernames of anyone. But we actually had a really close, so close that we're tied for the winner for the FM Talk 106.5 Pick'em Challenge. And I saw on the text line Fred was saying that, you know, he might be interested.
Uh-huh.
I think Fred is one of the two that are tied for the final lead in the FM Talk 106.5 Pick'em. The other is a relative of an employee here at FM Talk 106.5.
Does that DQ them?
I don't think that DQs them.
Okay.
Other than just being related, they're not affiliated in any other way with the station. So the thing is that I have to figure out now, Fred, who I'm sure is listening very closely right now, is they give you tiebreakers every single week. You know, you pick the winners of the
games. That's right. Nate, you can select the...
There's one game where you have to say what the score will be, and that's supposed to be the tiebreaker. And if we go by the final week, which was 2 weeks ago, is the final week of games, then our winner would actually be Will Cabanis, who won the entire thing. But I'm not sure if that 1 week's tiebreaker should be what decides it here.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to go into the lab and determine
the lab. Okay. When we get a lab.
When we get our lab, we'll all go into that lab.
We'll get a lab puppy.
And figure out who is the winner here, because we have two that ended up tied at the very end of the year. I think I need to go back through and see who picked most of the tiebreaker games closest, and that will be the FM Talk winner.
So you'll go back, and we're demanding a recount?
There has been a recount asked for, and we'll take it to the Supreme Court, and we'll see what happens.
I do like the ideas coming in for tiebreakers, like a Pokemon Go competition, where Eric says you have to solve Common Core math problems, tabletop paper football from Laura, staring contest, says Chester. It's good stuff. We'll be back.